This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. If you're anything like us, you don't just book trips, you run the numbers first. Is this flight actually a deal? Is that premium card pulling its weight? Should I use points here or save them for something better? Well, that's exactly what Smart Travel dives into. They break down which travel cards actually earn their keep and which ones just look impressive in your wallet. They'll walk you through the quick math for knowing when to pay with points versus cash, and they explain how to get real value from your rewards instead of settling for that tiny reward button at checkout. It's thoughtful, research-backed travel finance delivered in a way that feels approachable and actually useful the next time you're about to hit purchase. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts. If you're the type of traveler who can find the perfect flight on points, but you want the on-the-ground part to be just as dialed in, well, this episode is for you, because Morocco is one of those destinations where the points can get you there, but the experience can either be magical or overwhelming depending on how you plan it. Today, Azdeen from Destinations Morocco is going to walk us through what first-timers usually get wrong, how to avoid the classic planning pitfalls, plus understanding how safe is it really, especially for women travelers, and why having the right local guide can change everything in the Medinas. We're also getting into what authentic Morocco actually looks like in practice, plus a few quick points and miles angles for getting there, and where points can still help once you land. So if Morocco has ever been on your list, but you weren't quite sure how to do it right, well, this episode is one that you'll want to stick around for.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I'm your host, DeAndre Koch. We have a fantastic and unique guest for all of you all today. But before I introduce him, a couple of normal reminders. First, you can catch all of these episodes in their full entirety on our YouTube channel. And for those who are watching our YouTube or our content on YouTube, don't forget, you're missing about half the show if you don't also subscribe to the audio version, because every Friday we release our quick hits. That's our up-to-date news in the world of travel and points and miles, delivered pretty succinctly, pretty quickly, and a lot to unpack in a little bit of time. And also, we do have our Boldly Go Travels vlog style video content for you as well. And wherever you're watching this or listening to this, don't forget to give us a like, subscribe, and of course, we would love a 5-star rating and review. Now, this episode today is going to be a little bit different, and it's not a points and miles specific episode. And that's because I love to help all of you all revolutionize your travels in different ways. Now, yes, I always mention our podcast is about 70% points and miles focused, but there's a lot of great things to unpack with just people who are really knowledgeable about travel in general. As an example, last year on the show, we had an incredible episode about unique experiences in Rome and Italy that you won't find or hear about on TripAdvisor. And I have heard from listeners that have booked some of those trips and they've had incredible, incredible experiences because of that episode. And so that's why I want to welcome to the show Azdeen Elmostakim. Azdeen, did I get that right?
Absolutely.
Perfect, perfect. Well, Azine is the founder of Destinations Morocco and the host of the Destinations Morocco podcast, whose mission is to empower travelers to move beyond the stress and confusion, visa hurdles, language barriers, and endless choices to actually immerse themselves in the real Morocco. Azine, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, DeAndre. I'm very grateful for this amazing, amazing opportunity to be a guest on your podcast. I love the content. I love the podcast. I'm so thrilled to be here and share the love of Morocco with you and with the audience. Thank you.
Absolutely, Azine. Well, I'm excited to have you on the show as well. Let's start off with just a little bit of background. Where are you currently? Where do you live? And then, and what originally drew you to Morocco as a focus for kind of your work, the content you put out, all those beautiful things?
I am based in Houston, Texas. I've been living in the U.S. for the last 3 decades. I was born and raised in the imperial city of Marrakesh. My family hails from a small village in the outskirts of Ouarzazate. The village is called Tlouet, and that's where I originally from. What really inspired me, to do Morocco's destination, because it's my background and it's so much easier for me. And it's kind of a way falling back in love with the country, with the culture, the experiences, the people. So, me and my wife, we traveled quite a bit back and forth to Morocco, and then we had our son back in 2015, and we really wanted him to know his roots and where he comes from. So we know Morocco a little bit, and it was very important for us for him to know that. So, and he's been to Morocco about 3 or 4 times. He loves it. He loves, the culture, his family and friends. And, when we go to shows and presentations and expos, he does actually a better job than I do. And he's really, really talented when it comes to Morocco. And that really was very important for us, for him to know his roots. And along the way, we share our love for Morocco with the rest of the world. So it's just beautiful.
Oh, I absolutely love that. And I know there's a lot of thoughts on Morocco in a lot of different ways. Oh, my God, it's so beautiful. There's amazing food, and then there's things about concerns about safety as well. And we're going to cover kind of all of these things today, but I just want to kind of start off and ask, when people think of Morocco, what do you hear or see that they usually get wrong?
Oh, that's a really good question, DeAndre. Many, many things. There's a difference between perception and reality, and their perception of Morocco, if they had a chance to go to visit Morocco, changes immediately once they get to Morocco. So, and some of those, definitely safety, definitely women, the way people dress, the desert, a lot of people, they just think that we have camels everywhere. Some they think that we don't have air conditionings. So it's a lot of misunderstandings, misconceptions and stuff like that, DeAndre. So, but the biggest one is also has a lot to do with safety. Women being in Morocco and so forth, being an Islamic country for the majority. So yeah, there's quite a bit of misconceptions.
Perfect. Well, we're going to definitely touch a lot more depth on the safety side, because I know that's a big thing that I think a lot of listeners are going to want to hear about. But I want to start pivoting and talking about the beauty of Morocco, right? What are some of the experiences that you can have in Morocco that you're just not going to see on Instagram or guidebooks? I know that's really what you specialize in.
There's actually quite few. And, for 2025, one of the most popular experiences we have noticed, DeAndre, is a lot of people, they want to immerse themselves with the locals. So having lunch with the local, spending the afternoon with the local, a tea ceremony with the local. We're talking, a Berber family in the mountains, whether it's the southern part of Morocco or the north part of Morocco, visiting the nomads, visiting some, people that, a family that still lives in a cave in the north side of Morocco. Those are really, really the experiences that we realize and we understand that it really changes a lot of people afterwards when they visit, when they're gone and go back to whether it's New Zealand, Canada, US, that really stays with them and it changes them. So, Yeah, those are the things that you can't really get anywhere else. AI cannot help you with it. Google cannot help you with it. But that's what makes us different. You know, it's just we have access to the inaccessible. We are, you know, I'm based in the US. We have an office in Marrakesh, and we have a really, really good network of people throughout Morocco. So, and it makes a big difference, DeAndre.
So when someone's going to Morocco, where do you think they should be like focusing their attention? I think a lot of times, whether it, again, it is just from what you see on Instagram, which is kind of told you where to go or kind of put in your mind where you should go, I should say, people are going to go to Marrakesh and they're going to go to Fes. I would assume, I'm not the expert, obviously, you are. Those are kind of the two biggest places to go to. Where else should they be focusing their attention? I mean, you just mentioned some things in the mountains. I mean, Morocco is a good-sized country that, of course, you can try to travel throughout. Should it be a more adventurous exploration, or should they be parking themselves in one place?
That's a really good question, DeAndre. It really depends. The reason is it depends how much time did they have in Morocco. If it's a couple of days, if it's 3, 4, or 5 days, they probably need to stay in one place. And you're right. Fes and Marrakesh are the top destinations. Marrakesh has been the number one destination globally in Morocco, popular for the last decade or so. So Fes is the oldest city in Morocco. So you can't really go wrong with both those cities. And also, I'm very glad that you mentioned them, because you can still have maybe 3 days or 4 days in Morocco and still do day trips. If you're in Fes, you can do day trips in the outskirts of Fes and neighboring cities and see quite a bit of things. The same thing with Marrakesh. Marrakesh obviously has a little bit more options because of its location. So it just depends on the time that you have to spend in Morocco, DeAndre. So, but it can, you know, if you have a week, I always recommend do the north side of Morocco or do the south side of Morocco. And also one thing that is really, really important, for the first time that you're traveling to Morocco, try to hire a local guide if you can, you know, because the local guides, they really make or break the tour. I mean, if you go just by yourself, there's so many logistics to take care of. And Morocco is, it's not Europe where everything is organized and we have, you can look up things and it's easy to figure out. Morocco is different. There's no system in place that you can really follow. And that's what makes it challenging, but at the same time, very exciting to visit. So,
awesome. I love that. And I think that's really where, as you said, that can make or break the experience, because I wanted to talk a little bit about our experience, and this experience is not that we were there, but that we were hesitant to go there. I know we talked a little bit offline about this, but I think it'd be really helpful for you to share your thoughts on this, especially to our audience. And more so, we actually had, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, my wife and I, we actually had flights booked to Morocco. We had found a great points deal. We booked them, hadn't really figured out our itinerary yet, but we at least had the flights there. And my wife, Taryn, who's in a lot of like women travel groups, like solo female traveler and just different women travel groups in general, was trying to do some research, as she does for a lot of places we go, to figure out where we should go, what we should do. And she was seeing a lot of comments and a lot of things about safety concerns. And not that necessarily anyone was assaulted or anything like that, but more so women were saying, hey, I went there, I didn't just go solo, I was with my boyfriend, I was with my husband, whatever it may be, and we were getting a constantly kind of yelled at, catcalled, kind of, you know, a lot of unwanted attention, I would say, was as how I could best describe it. And so because of that, she felt a little bit concerned of how safe it would feel and be. And I know of other individuals and people that have gone to Morocco and had a fantastic time. And I feel like I've always heard those people were with guides. So does that really separate? Like, can you talk through the concerns around safety and how people could feel safe? Because obviously, you know, we're big travelers. We go all over the world. We've walked the streets of Mexico City at 9 different places. But this place had a little bit of extra kind of concern factor there. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, absolutely, DeAndre. This is extremely important, and I'm so glad that you have brought it up. And I agree with you 100%. The local guides are the difference, one of the difference. The reason is because when you're walking into the Medina and it's a crowded space and so many people, the vendors, people, when they see you, a local guide with you, when they see his badge or her badge, they just don't say a word to you. They are not going to invite you in. They are not going to try to hassle you, haggle you, or sell you stuff and or scam you even. So it's a protection in a way, DeAndre. Now, when you're traveling by yourself, it's very unfortunate, but it's still part of the culture because everybody wants something from you. Safety, Morocco is very safe. It's one of the safest places to visit for solo travelers, for female travelers. And also, if you're trying to go to Morocco, the first time again, it's very important to go with a group. There's a lot of tour operators that they offer small group tours. I always recommend the small group tours, you know, no more than 12 people, you know, in a minibus or a sprinter, because the experience still feels intimate and it still feels like it is a private tour versus, you know, a big bus of 40 or 50 people, then it just, you're not going to really get that immersive experience if you would, DeAndre. So in terms of safety, it is very valid concern, but also it's very safe in Morocco. So definitely the local guides play a big role in, you know, just keeping all the hustle and bustle out of your way, if you would, especially in tight spaces and medinas like Fez, like Marrakesh.
Now, I'm curious, outside of just having a local guide for the trips and such, what other advice would you give to first-time visitors to feel confident and comfortable on the ground? Because realistically speaking, unless I guess maybe you have a private guide that's with you your entire trip in the country, if you're doing just kind of small excursions or half-day trips or day trips or whatever it may be, there's still, you know, once you get dropped off, you're still kind of by yourself, right? Or when you're on your way to get on to the pickup point, you're still by yourself. How can you still feel safe, feel confident, and more importantly, feel comfortable, whether you're a solo female, you're a couple, a family? You know, what, any other advice besides kind of like, hey, stick with your guide that you would suggest?
That's a good question, DeAndre. This is how we do it. When you travel with us, and that's what makes us a little bit different. Basically, you have access to your local driver, current driver, you have access to them 24/7. Then you have access to your local guide. Now, the guides I want to talk about, there's three different types of guides. On your tour with us, there are the local guides that we pair you with in all major cities like Marrakesh, Rabat, Casablanca, Fez. And those, they just do that specific city. You know, it's a half a day or probably a full day. And then once they're done, they're done. They don't stay with you. Then there's the national guide, a certified national guide. He can be with you in all the cities and you don't need the local guides at that point. However, if you have a group of, you know, maybe 17, 20 people that you need the national guide plus a local guide anywhere you go by the law. That's the system in Morocco. So you're going to have two, one local and one national, because the group of it's large and they need two people to explain versus just one person. Now, the third option, which is tour leaders, or they're also called mountain guides, they can be with you throughout from the moment you get picked up at the airport until you get dropped off. However, by the law, they cannot do the job of local guides anywhere you go. So therefore, you still need to hire local guides in all the other major cities that you're going to be in. So for us, it depends the type of traveler. And that's how we basically build the itinerary. But for the most part, just to save some money, we do the local guides. It's cheaper that way versus having a national guide or a tour leader plus the local guides. So if you're first time traveling to Morocco, I always say hire somebody, work with a company, somebody that you have done your homework with and you feel very comfortable with, and let them do everything for you. Because again, with Morocco, because there's no system, you know, the public transportation, we don't use it. Everything we use is private luxury vehicles. The transportation system is not compatible with Europe. It's not labeled the right way. And you're going to be wasting a lot of time, and time is very valuable because you don't have much of it in Morocco. So it's definitely going the route that you go with a tour company or a DMC or a travel agent. They can book all those things for you. And now the second time when you go back, now we have the experience. Yeah, now you can do a lot of those things on your own. So, but we'll talk a little bit more in details as we go into the episode, DeAndre, because there are a lot of things to do and not to do when it comes to traveling to Morocco on your own.
No, I absolutely love that. And I'm curious because I know we have a variety of different type of travelers who listen to this show. And, you know, we've got my wife and I, we're in the kind of couples, no kid world. We love more of a luxury experience. We have listeners to this show that prefer more of the budget style travel, which is completely fine as well. We have the ones that are there with their family. So all their travel is just, you know, it's them and they might have 2, 3, 4 kids. And so we have a variety of listeners to this show. And I know there are different experiences that kind of matter for different age groups and age ranges. So I'm really curious, how do you kind of create the right authentic experiences for each of these groups? Because I could see someone saying, I don't really want to be on a bus with 17 people or even 10 people. Can we just do an experience that's just our family? And, you know, can we do that? Or maybe someone that's more looking on the budget side would rather be in a larger group, whether it's because of cost or just safety and numbers for their personal mindset. So how do you kind of recommend, or I should say, which route do you recommend someone go? Or is it really fully customizable depending on your style?
That's really, really, really good question. I love it because you give the answer, you ask the question, but in that question, there's the answer. So we have never built 2 itineraries that are equal or the same. So everybody is very different. So we built that itinerary according to them and it's on their terms. So you said for the family travelers or the multi-gen family, when we build the itinerary, we tend to build it so that the kids will feel more comfortable. It will be enjoyable to them because you don't want to fill it up with history and attractions and, you know, and things like that, because the kids are going to be really, really bored. So we focus on the kids traveling with their parents and grandparents. So that way that experience is a lot of fun for them. And then when the parents see that the kids are having fun, they're having fun as well. And then we can actually, it is a private tour and we can have a separate vehicle just for example, the kids and maybe a parent or so, and they can do something different than the rest of the group. They can do something else. If they want to go shopping, we'll get them a vehicle and a driver to go shopping. Then the parent or the rest of the family, they can go exploring, you know, gardens or doing other things. So everything we do, it's very private. Those are all private tours. We're starting to do a small group tour, which is going to be this year, November, and I'm going to be organizing it, and I'm going to be going with the group. And it's a small group tour. It's 12 passengers, 12 travelers. And again, we tend to do it in a way that it still feels kind of a private. So we've done, you know, a family of 8, they can have, you get the group price, but it's still a private tour. So there's nobody else in the vehicle with them. It's just them and so forth. So again, everything is customizable 100%. And if, let's say, for example, you have no kids, just you and your wife, and then we can do a combination of, you can stay in a luxury places, but then again, we combine it with those immersive experiences with the locals and, you know, whether it's a hammam experience, a hot air balloon, a camel ride, you know, cooking class or food tasting tour, so many things that we can pair them. And again, we work with everybody what they want. That's it. By the end, when we finish the itinerary, it's exactly what they want to experience in Morocco.
I love that because it sounds like we're trying to really balance, you know, again, what people want with the immersion side of things. I know you value kind of authentic Moroccan travel. I'm really curious as to what does that look like in practice? I mean, you named a couple things, right? The hammams, hot air balloons, camel rides, different things like that, you know, immersion with the local culture. What would you really consider to be authentic travel in Morocco?
That's a good question, Deandre. It starts with when we pick you up at the airport, we tend not to use hotels. We use riads. And the riads, they only exist in Morocco. So that's a very, very authentic experience. And we 99% of the time we use riads, unless in Casablanca where there's no riads, and that's where we use a hotel. So for the small group and then for the private tours, we use riads. And again, the riad, those are, you know, Moroccan houses back in the 19th century. That's where they live, multi-families. And, you know, there's like a palm tree or a banana tree inside the courtyard. And there's a water fountain. And sometimes it's just one level. Sometimes it's 2 or 3 levels, depending on how big the family is. And those are really, really unique and authentic. And each riad is different. So there's no 2 riads that look the same, by the way. So that's what makes it really, really authentic experience. And the feedback, everybody really loves them. The sizes, they really vary from riad to riad, but Fez has the best ones in Morocco, Marrakesh as well. Shiv Chauhan as well, even though Shiv Chauhan, the sizes are a little bit smaller. So that's what, you know, it's anywhere you go, it's a really different and unique experience, if you would, DeAndre. So that's where we start with, you know, the accommodations. Then the location, we tend to have something that it's, you know, in the Medina, and also it's accessible in terms of by car. So you're immersing yourself with the locals. It feels like you really live in the Medina with the locals and so forth. And again, that feeling, that comfort, and it's really, really nice as well. So plus the other experiences that we add, depending on the preference of the travelers.
Hey everyone, quick break from the episode. If you're enjoying the show, make sure you're subscribed on whatever platform you're listening on so you never miss an episode. And if you've gotten any value so far, it would mean the world if you left a quick rating or review. It helps more people discover the show and keeps us motivated to keep creating great content. Also, if you're feeling stuck or want help with points and miles, whether it's picking your first card, planning a big redemption, or even having someone book it all for you, we've got you covered. There's a link in the show notes to schedule a free points and miles consultation. Just fill out a quick questionnaire, tell us your goals, and we'll take it from there. And don't forget, our newsletter and private Facebook group are great ways to stay on top of breaking news, updated card offers, and tips that don't always make it into the podcast. You'll find those links in the show notes as well. Now, back to the episode. Now, one of the things you said in the beginning was that there's a lot of misconceptions because it's a desert, there's maybe no AC. I would assume, especially if you're trying to curate more of a luxury experience, that many of these riads, or some of them at least, have AC as an option. So for the guests to not feel like they're sleeping in a desert.
You're absolutely right, DeAndre. They do have air conditioning and they do have heaters, you know, just in the winter time, it gets really cold. Yes. In the desert, where it gets really, really hot, they also have air conditioners and heaters as well. And this is, you know, comparing to 10 years ago, it was different. So, but nowadays, everything is air conditioned.
Awesome. That's good to know, because I think these are some of the things that people would be thinking about, be concerned about, and be worrying about. And I think it's good, again, to shift the vision and the viewpoint that some may have, or ideally be in the thought process of how they can put Morocco on their list of places to go. Now, I do want to transition a little bit and talk about planning pitfalls and what to avoid. And my question for you here, Azdeen, is what are some of the biggest mistakes you see that first-time Morocco travelers make? And I know, again, you keep alluding to have a guide, so I can assume one of the answers is, hey, they just go in and they don't have a guide, they just kind of explore like they would a country in Europe. But what other first-time mistakes do you see people make?
Few mistakes that I have seen a lot of people make is they want to drive by themselves in Morocco. I mean, it's very difficult. You know, there's the chance of you falling a scam to the rental car, but the rental car is not really the issue because you can pay for everything here in the US. And then when you get to Morocco, that clerk, that agent will scam you for a little bit more money. That's number one. Number two, you're going to have a GPS, but still you're not going to be familiar with which way to go and so forth. So that's a big one. Again, going to the legalities of things. So, you know, looking at it in terms of a legal perspective, you don't want to get into an accident in a foreign country and, you know, just the back and forth. And it's going to really, really affect your experience. The number one thing that I see people mistake is they want to take public transportation. Yes, we do have a very good train system, a fast train system, the Burak, and it goes into some really, really popular destinations. But then again, once you get to that destination, how are you going to handle going, you know, to the desert? You can't take the train, you can't take the buses. So you need to have somebody, hire a company that can take you there. The other thing is public transportation, just avoid as much as you can. The other mistake that I see a lot of people taking or making is when you go to Morocco, don't take a lot of cash with you. There's ATM machines that you can use. And when you get the money, you know, just make sure you have it in different pockets, because don't put all the bills in one place because people are watching you. So you really have to protect yourself in a way and just be careful. Those are just a few things that I can really think of, DeAndre.
So actually, I think that's an interesting tip there. So what would you recommend from a dollar standpoint, you know, for someone? Obviously, again, I know every traveler is going to be different. The size of family is going to be different, all those different things. But for entering into Morocco, how much do you think someone should bring with them in cash to exchange at the airport when they get there? Or should they exchange in town? Or should they exchange before they even get into the country along the way? What's typically your advice there?
I used to be able to exchange before, and it's used to be the same case in a lot of airports. Now, a lot of airports, they don't carry the Moroccan currency. So when you get to Morocco, I don't really recommend getting exchange at the airport unless you need to maybe exchange $50. That's more than enough to get you around, you know, for the first day. In Morocco, there are some riads or hotels that they give better exchange rate than the banks or the postal service or other places. So if you're in Marrakesh, the square, there's a hotel. It's called Hotel Ali. That's one of the really good locations. I would give you a really good rate in terms of money exchange. So that's what I would do in terms of how much cash to take with you. I would say probably, you know, 500, 1,000, then use your ATM machine. And then when you use the ATM machine, just make sure you use it early morning, especially weekdays if you're in the major cities. If you go to the southern part of Morocco, there's going to be limitation on the ATM machines. Do not use an ATM machine in a gas station on the way to the desert or in the mountains, because if the ATM machine takes your debit card, then good luck getting it back. So it's going to be a really hassle. So use them during business hours. In case something happens, you can still go inside the bank and retrieve your card without any issues. So, and again, in Morocco, you don't want to be carrying a lot of cash, because literally anywhere you go now, they accept credit cards, debit cards, and you can use those to pay for things, you know, souvenirs or purchases and stuff like that, even restaurants and hotels. So
awesome. I think that's super helpful information, because I think every time you need to go into a new country, it's really easy to just Google, well, what should I bring, and cashless versus whatever it may be. I think it's important. But I think I want to hit back on a point, key point that you said. So that was to make sure, you know, at the airport, only exchange around $50. I assume now the taxis or transportation, well, obviously, if you're with a guide, they're going to be picking you up and taking you where you're going to be. But let's just say someone's not listening to any of these things and they decide to land there and they want to take a taxi to their hotel or their riad. Do taxis take credit card or are they cash only?
That's a really, really good question, DeAndre. And I love the way you listen. You're connected and you listen to everything that I'm saying. That's super impressive. The taxis, they don't really take credit cards yet in Morocco. But when you get to the airport, this is one of the biggest scams ever in Morocco. Now it's under control. They changed the system, which is super helpful in regards to the tourists, and it's saving them scams literally every day. So basically, when you get to the airport, as soon as you exit, you're going to see a kiosk either to your left hand side or right hand side. In that kiosk, you go in and you just say, hey, you know, I'm going to, for example, and you mentioned the neighborhood, I'm going to downtown. Then they'll say, hey, your rate is, you know, $3. Then you pay, they give you a little voucher. That voucher you go and you give it to the first taxi in line. There's no money exchange with the taxi. Wherein before it used to be, they'll charge you upwards of, you know, a few hundred dollars, and they'll team up against you until you have no choice but to accept the scam. So this is a major win for tourists in Morocco in terms of taxis. So that's why I said, you know, no more than $50, because it's more than enough for you to get by your first day until you say, hey, you know what, I need to get a little bit more exchange, or I'm good for now and stuff like that. So depending on your situation, DeAndre.
I think that's super helpful to know, because it's these little tidbits that I think can really change someone's experience when they get into the airport, or just knowing what to expect can be huge. So Adzian, question here, how far in advance should someone start planning a Morocco trip if they want it done right?
That's a really good question. It really depends on the time that they're going to Morocco. Let's say they want to go to Morocco in December, plan a minimum of 9 months ahead. Especially the last 2 weeks in December, because it is busy season. It is a surprise to a lot of people because it is Christmas and it is New Year. And those are still, they're really big celebration in Morocco. So things really get booked rapidly. And also the accommodations, whether it's a riad or a hotel, they're not going to accept your booking for one night. They want to do, some do minimum of 3 nights, some do minimum of 4 nights. So we want to get those really ahead of time. That way you have a lot of options to choose from. Typically, on average, I would say a minimum of 4 to 5 months planning, because different companies or tour operators, you know, they want you to finish paying for your tour 2 months ahead, I mean, or 3 months before your tour. So that's, you know, 60 days or 90 days. So you really need to give the actual planning in about 2 months prior to that. So we're talking 4 to 5 months is a really good window to plan for regular trips to Morocco. The high season, which is spring, just add another month. Maybe 6 months is good.
Now, one of the things you mentioned earlier is that for the first timers, they need to go with a guide. But after they've been to Morocco, they can probably experience it without a guide with no issues. But I'm really curious, what's one thing that people, no matter how many times they've been, essentially, I guess unless they're a local, one thing they should never try to plan entirely on their own? Is there anything that even someone that's been there before that wants to go back and they hear this episode, they say, oh, okay, cool, I don't have to worry about a guide again. Is there any one thing you could think of or any things you could think of that they should really plan to not or try not to plan on their own?
The desert experience.
The desert experience.
Yes.
Got it. Is it more of a, like, don't get stranded or lost in the desert? Is that the piece?
That's one of them, yes. It's because it's you can't really go into it by yourself or, you know, rent a car and drive because it's you have to have somebody doing it for you.
Perfect. Good to know. Good, very good to know. So as we start to wrap up or head in the direction of wrapping up, but I do want to make sure we talk a little bit about the points aspect of Morocco travel, because of course we have a big points and miles listenership. Let's talk a little bit about who Morocco is for, but also who it isn't for. And I want to first ask, you know, I know this is really wide ranging, right? Because you know, there's something for everyone in almost any country, but what type of travelers do you think Morocco is perfect for?
Oh, there's no right or wrong answer to that, DeAndre. It depends on the traveler, how they see Morocco and how they want to experience it. I mean, we were teenagers and, you know, traveling in Morocco is just like, you know, going somewhere and just sleeping in a tent somewhere and hanging out with our friends. That's for us, that was adventurous. For us, that was fun. But now it's like, you know, I'm in mid my 50s. I want a local guide. I want a immersive experience. I want to have a reservation at a restaurant and have dinner and a show. So it's really different for each one. But then Morocco, because it's diversity, because of the location and everything that it offers, it really gives everybody a little bit of things that they would absolutely enjoy. So there's so many ways to travel to Morocco. But the one that we really specialize on is, you know, we help the people that are struggling to create their own itinerary. So we create their itinerary for them and they'll enjoy Morocco like a local. So that's what we specifically do. So in a way, you said so many different types of people go to Morocco, but we cannot really work with all of them. That's just the truth. But we work with the one that they need help from A to Z and everything wanted to be planned for. So, and we also work with different types of budgets. And the biggest, basically what makes the budget, you know, lower or higher is the accommodation. So we have access to, you know, the luxury side, then the premium side, then the regular side of the accommodations, DeAndre.
Now, are there any travelers you think that may not enjoy Morocco as much? And it could be for a variety of different reasons. I'm not sure, maybe accessibility, it can be a concern or anything like that. But at least maybe on their first visit, did any subset that you think may have a little bit more of a difficulty enjoying the Moroccan experience by chance?
Oh, 100%. Yes. I would say you mentioned it already. Mobility is very important. Now, especially when you go to the mountains, when you go to the southern part of Morocco, where mobility can be challenged because, you know, here in the US, you have wheelchair area. You have, you know, it's very accessible. Back home, it's still not at that level yet. If you're in the major city, you're perfectly fine. You're good. But if you want to explore a little bit more into the exotic part of Morocco, it's definitely going to be a challenge.
Perfect. That's really good to know. I do have a question for you from something you mentioned earlier, and that's that it's majorly Islamic country. And my wife and I have said on this show before, we've had the best times in primarily Islamic countries. We're talking Dubai, Oman, I mean, the Maldives as well. Most people don't know the Maldives is actually 100% Muslim country. So a lot of great experiences in these countries. But certain countries, obviously, the clothing requirements for women are going to be different and kind of what they allow and don't allow, even though they're all Islamic countries. Like, for instance, Qatar was a lot more strict on their clothing than Dubai is, as an example. Just because I have a primarily female audience, any recommendations or restrictions that need to be aware of for men and women, but I know many women listen to this show, that would be worth noting?
That's a really good point, DeAndre. 98% of our audience and people that book with us are women. So I completely understand the exact question. And you're right in, you know, there's a lot of different Islamic countries, but also there's sometimes we don't confuse, but we just mix the culture with the religion and so forth. So some countries are a little bit more strict. Morocco is definitely not one of them. It's very laid back. And I get this question all the time. And I always answer the same way. Just wear what makes you comfortable. Like, you know, like the way that you're dressed up, it's perfect. You know, the way that anybody's dressed up is perfect for Morocco, because tourism in Morocco, it's very, very important. Just to give you a little bit of numbers, in 2024, we did 17.4 million visitors in Morocco. Last year, 2025, we did 19.8 million visitors to Morocco. And those 2 years, for the first time, Morocco ranked number one in Africa after Egypt. So Egypt is just beautiful. The whole Africa is just magnificent in terms of tourists, you know, experiences and things like that. So those numbers show really how important tourism is. And for Morocco, it is really a massive deal, if you would. And I tell people, if you look at every family in Morocco, they have somebody, at least one or two people from that family that directly or indirectly working into the tourism sector. So tourism is huge in Morocco. And also comes with it flexibility. Morocco is a very diverse country. We're influenced by Europe, Africa, Middle East, our own ethnic groups. So it's really, really diverse in that regards. So when you go to Morocco, you'll see, you know, people dressed up, you know, from head to toe. You'll see people wearing mini skirts. You'll see people, you know, just like anywhere else, similar to the States. But you'll definitely see the majority of the dresses are local. So, and I always say to people that are traveling to Morocco, you know, just wear something that it's local, whether it's, you know, a national jersey or, you know, like something that you see on the street, you know, maybe $5. It makes you look cool. And then you look like you're, you know, you fit in. I mean, people just, they love it. They look at you and it's like, oh, wow, they feel proud. So that's one of the things that I always tell people traveling to Morocco, just look like the locals if you can. So for $5, $10 and you're good.
I absolutely love that. I absolutely love that. Well, Azdeen, we can't end this episode without covering something from a points and miles standpoint, since this is primarily a points and miles podcast. And I'm really curious, to the best of your knowledge, because I don't believe you get as deep into the weeds of points and miles as I do and a lot of our listeners do, but where does Morocco fit into for a points and miles strategy, whether it's flights, hotels, whatever it may be, for a lot of us in the U.S. here that can do this type of points-based travel?
That's a really, really good question. And I listened to your last episode. I mean, oh my God, you are a ninja when it comes to points. I love the content.
Thank you.
So Morocco, the good thing and the bad thing. The good thing is you can absolutely use your points in Morocco. The bad thing, it's not the same as the US. But I want to start with flights. There are direct flights from United to Morocco, from New York actually to direct flight to Marrakesh. There's a Delta flight direct from Atlanta, Georgia to Marrakesh. And there's Miami, you know, airport to Casablanca. There's New York, another flight from New York to Casablanca. There's Boston to Casablanca. And then in LA, they're going to have a flight direct from Los Angeles to Morocco. So all those airlines, you can travel with points, which is really, really good. And they're long points, so you'll get quite a bit. Some of the hotels, we have over 200 international brands of hotels in Morocco, and you can absolutely use points. We're talking, you know, Marriott, Hilton, and their affiliation. So Barcelo, Accor Hotel, so many hotels, and you can absolutely use the points. Now, the difference is some hotels may not give you the best room that they have because of the points versus, you know, if you're paying for it in terms of cash or money. So that's the only difference in Morocco. So the Riyadhs, I don't know of any Riyadh that accepts points because they are privately owned and, you know, sometimes just the family that owns them really. But you do have quite a bit of options. So the other thing that I want to mention, when you book with us, we take care of all the accommodations for you. Now, you have points, then you can book those on your own, which, you know, saves you money and stuff like that. So it's absolutely worth it. So really, really good point, DeAndre.
Yeah, I would say I know that it's Royal Air Maroc, which is part of Oneworld, and you actually can book through, I believe, American Airlines as well. So if you do have American Airlines miles, you can use some of that. I don't know exactly the quality of the redemption there. I'm not going to get into the analytics here, but you can definitely use some American Airlines miles to book a Royal Air Maroc. But then also for the listeners, I mean, Morocco is essentially just south of Europe. I mean, it's right there. So I think also if someone's looking to go there, they can very easily do a flight from the US to Europe, whether it's Paris, Rome, whatever it may be, and then do what we call a positioning flight. So a non-points, you know, kind of cash-based second flight from Europe right into Morocco there. So they're not trying to have to figure out the logistics of getting from the US straight to Morocco on points. It could be a better points deal just to go to Europe and then do a little hopper of a couple hour flight down to Morocco. So there's definitely options there. And I think it's really cool that Morocco is continuing to grow. There's hotel options there. And I think probably with the Riyadhs as well, if they're bookable online, then they're probably in some of the travel portals for some of the Chase and American Express credit cards. So people could choose to use their points through a travel portal to book a Riyadh or something like that, as opposed to directly using Hilton points or whatever it may be. So it's good to know there's options there, obviously. But I wanted to make sure we had at least a little nugget there for our listeners on the point side.
Okay, I just want to add something really quick, DeAndre.
Absolutely.
The hotels that I have mentioned, some of them actually, they own Riyadhs. So you can use those points in those Riyadhs that they're owned by the Marriott or the Hilton and stuff like that. Then the American airline, you can use the points from Miami to Casablanca as well.
Love that. I absolutely love that. That's good to know that some of the Riyadhs are owned by the big hotel chains too, because I honestly would have never known that or even thought to look for that at all. Azdeen, this was fantastic. A lot of great information and knowledge here. I think that's going to be helpful for a lot of individuals. Again, you have a company that does this. So where can the listeners follow you, learn more about your company? And then also, you got to mention the podcast that you have as well.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, DeAndre. People can find us, the best way is through our website, which is destinationsmorocco.com. That's destinations with an S, morocco.com. And when you go to the website, again, I'll talk about the private small group too that I'm going to be organizing in November. It's from November 8th through the 15th. It's going to be an incredible experience. If you've never been to Morocco, this is one of the best ways to really, really experience it. Then they can listen to our podcast anywhere they get their podcast, which is Destination Morocco Podcast. Thank you so much, DeAndre.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And as I mentioned, we had Morocco on our list. It's still on our list to get to. I absolutely know that we are going to get there, and it feels, I think, better knowing that we've got, I say, an inside source that can help us figure out the best things to do, plan an itinerary, all those different things. So I don't know when we'll do it, but eventually we're going to get on your schedule to chat through a trip to Morocco, and then we can report back on what our experience in Morocco was like, as we like to do when we unpack all the trips that we do. So absolutely appreciate you being on the show, Azdeen. Just a couple last things before we wrap this one up. Two questions I always like to ask our guests. The first is, who next should we have on the show?
Oh, that's a really good question. I would say there's a girl that I did a podcast. She's from Kenya. Her name is Hekaya. And it's just, we had so much fun. And the episode was just beyond incredible. I believe she lives in South Africa and maybe in from Morocco. It just, there's a strange connection, you know, between us because of the motherland. And it's just beautiful. So that's, it really, really stands out for me. Hekaya, definitely.
Perfect. Well, we'll reach out and see if we can get her on a future episode. Azdeen, anything, any last words or anything else you'd love for the listeners to know, or any final thoughts before we wrap this one up?
I just want to say thank you, DeAndre. I'm very grateful for this amazing opportunity, and I really, really appreciate you being patient with me. And we missed our, you know, spot time, but thank you to the audience. And if anybody needs anything related to Morocco, we would love to help. That's what we're here for. Thank you so much.
Absolutely, Azdeen. Well, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for giving us some wisdom and knowledge on Morocco, things to do, what to see, how to experience it, and how to make sure that you go there and you have an amazing experience as well. And for listeners out there, if you enjoyed this episode today, as always, please be sure to follow us on all social media channels. Sign up for our newsletter, our private Facebook group, our WhatsApp community chat. These are all the ways that you get to interact and integrate within our amazing, amazing community. And our weekly newsletter always has something new, a travel deal, and a lot of other information that you'll find super helpful. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, tell your friends, do all the things, and we will see you on the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
The New York Times named the Frommer's Travel Podcast one of the 13 best for travel. Why did they like it? Well, they said, and I quote, "With charisma and candor, Pauline Frommer discusses the charms and ongoing transformations of places near and far, whether on the islands of Hawaii or on safari in Tanzania." Pretty nice, huh? We post new podcasts weekly, talking about travel from every angle. I hope you'll tune in.
Hey guys, Aaron Miller here from Armchair Explorer, and I just wanted to let you know that our new series is out now. We've got kite skiing across Antarctica, Aboriginal storytellers, and the craziest whitewater race in the world. We're going on a bucket list hike across Italy. We're going to the fjords of Norway in search of the Northern Lights and lots, lots more. Our goal is to take you on the trip of a lifetime every single week. You can find Armchair Explorer on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you're listening right now, and at VoiceScape.com.